to talk about thinking that its main difference from thought, from a sort of atomic, single thought, imperceivable, yes, but thinking, when we use the word thinking, it is what? Grasping of thoughts as a process, yes. So, early in the morning, I had a flush, yes. For instance, finally, well, I realized in the flush, yes, that I'm nobody, that I'm nothing. Yes, a purely Buddhist thought, yes. But when I'm speaking about that, and now I'm speaking, it is what? Well, 2 seconds, 3 seconds, 4 seconds. It has its what? Duration, you understand that? You understand that? Whereas one dharma of consciousness, or one thought, it is the same, has practically no duration. And that is why it can be perceived only yogically, in a transcendental way. And, ladies and gentlemen, one analogy, it's very interesting. By the way, I am asking you, Andrew, yes. Can one electron be perceived? No. But you know what? Because again, it's a flash, yes. It's a momentary flash. But again, ladies and gentlemen, however strange it might sound, but so one chap also had thought, no, one electron cannot be perceived by our organs of sense. And next day he did perceive it. Can you imagine? And subsequently, when he described the experiment, he got what? Bloody Nobel Prize. He and two of other physicists. And it was indeed a normal visual perception through eyesight, yes. But you understand that perception was not alone, it was what? Together with his thought about what? Electron. At first, nobody wanted to believe. But after his description of the experiment, particularly after he and two other chaps got Nobel Prize for it, of course all Americans believed him, because in our world, as in any other, for you to be believed, you have to be, well, to have official bureaucratic recognition, yes, bureaucratic in any sense, you understand that, yes. But again, what is remarkable, it was a real normal perception. So now I am perceiving what? Billions and billions of photons, yes? And because the room is, the glass is lighted, and I cannot perceive one photon or one electron. But so it was established. If I'm not mistaken, it was in 1939 in Moscow, of all the places. But so it was established that a normal human eye can perceive the flash of one electron and have enough time even to say, listen, old man, just now I perceived it. So it was in reality. But again, you forget that it was not only that flash, but also the thought about such a thing as an electron. Otherwise, he would have never known what. What did he perceive? Yes. And this has nothing to do with sensual perception, but everything to do with one's thought, or even in this particular case, physical knowledge. Because another chap could have perceived it thousands of times, but without any previous or previous or synchronous or simultaneous thought, not perception, about that which is electron. Yeah, you got it, yes? Enough for the time being. Now, the second moment of today's speech, the second moment, still, returning to thought, what can we say philosophically about thought? And this is a very tricky question. Why? Because in fact it is within the framework of our philosophical tradition, yes, from Aristotle up till today. When you say about something, about the object at least of your investigation, of your exploration, of your knowledge, it is implied that that object, what, Andrea?
Exists.
Exactly, splendid, exists or is, shall we say. But that second moment of our lesson today is that in the Buddhist philosophy of thinking, thought, consciousness, mind, a thought does not exist. Whenever it is thought about or perceived, like electron in my example, it is perceived when it was, when it was energies, which is not the same as what is. Emerges, we may say, becomes. The moment of becoming, not the moment of being. Because the very expression in English, even in American English, the moment of being is clumsy. Because then I would immediately ask, the moment of being what? Yes? So while here the thought was meditated upon in the Buddhist philosophy or contemplated in a transcendental way in Buddhist yoga, not as being but as becoming, in at the moment of its emergence, because that moment, 164 billionth fraction of a second, is not the moment of being or existence. It is becoming. You caught it, you grasped it, you imagined it, and then contemplated it at the moment of its becoming, or better, of its emergence, which term was introduced in into the modern science and philosophy by Sir Stanley Stuart Eddington, if I'm not mistaken, in 1929. He didn't get Nobel Prize for that, don't worry. Yes, yes, but he was a great astronomer and a very talented philosopher. He was the first, after the Buddhist philosophers of old, who said, well, let us see the universe not as existing, but as becoming, as emerging at each and every moment of our seeing it, contemplating it, or thinking about that. Yes? It's not as difficult as that, yes? Don't go mad about that. And in Buddhism it applies to all objects of the universe, and in the first place to thinking and to thinker, and to that which is thought of or thought about. You got it, yes? Now, still there remains one tricky thing which cannot be ignored. And that thing is that again, in our practical life, or shall we say in our practical existence, which doesn't know that it is not an existence but becoming emergence, yes, we still think about thinking, think about consciousness, and even think about all mental processes, yes, as attributed to, as ascribed to you or to me, yes, yes, or to a cat, or to Einstein, or to a crocodile, shortly, to that about which I suppose that it would be better to say not to whom, but to that which is supposed to be thinking, that which thinks, yes. Even if that, in our modern scientific parlance, that is not a human being, but what? Bloody computer. As some mad guys in Oxford, Cambridge and Harvard had already begun to speculate about that, from which we have a theory of what artificial intellect or artificial intelligence. What is very funny about that theory, it is not really a theory in a scientific sense, it is rather a vague conjecture or hypothesis. That there must be a kind of thought-producing mechanism, yes, which can be construed and constructed artificially. You know that idea, yes, sir? By the way, in itself, however banal, it is not a bad idea. What is bad about that idea? That when you, and it was, by the way, done by one very talented modern philosopher, John Searle. What is bad about that artificial intelligence or artificial intellect is that in fact it amounts, or at least seems to be, tantamount to not artificial intellect but artificial man, artificial human being. In other words, it is a kind of a technological imitation of a human being, understood as, again, thinking mechanism. But the Buddhist masters of old knew perfectly well that man is not a thinking mechanism. That there are a lot of organisms, a lot of things, things which may be supposedly able to what? To think. Not only man, not only God, yes. Not only, yes, as one very talented American psychologist, together with one other also very talented Australian psychophysiologist, yes, they decided that the most, shall we say, sharply thinking, quickly thinking mechanism in the world is whose mechanism? Of rat, you know that? And rats think, according to some investigations, much quicker than any, however talented human being. Yes, don't you be disappointed about that, yes. Yes, but why should we be better than rats? Well, I would never be offended by such a comparison, yes. But anyway, what is here important? So, there is no being of thought. There is only emergence, becoming, or best of all, arise of thought. In Sanskrit and Pali, chitotpada, rise of thought. Because thought exists, thinking exists, only in its arises, flashes, emergences. But however simple as a phenomenon that may seem to be, in fact it is not as simple as that. Because the analysis of that phenomenon of rise, analysis which Kant would have undoubtedly called the transcendental analysis, would reveal, and it was revealed in the Buddhist philosophy of thought, thinking, mind, and consciousness, that even that flash, that momentary emergence of thought is not simple, it has its composition. But composition in not in the sense that something is composed of several things. But composition, again, it's a very important philosophical point. Composition only in the sense of simultaneous, synchronous emergence of various, more than one, of several phenomena in one, which we, for convenience sake, would call emergence or rise of thought. Which are they? First of all, now I am quoting from a very famous Buddhist text, from which that author of those pages, I ask you to read, a brilliant Buddhologist, already late, Nyingma Poinkatera, quotes all the time. So, but that flash, that momentary emergence, it's emergence of what we call what thought. That is thought itself, together with its, there is no sir, thinking, as such, thinking. What are you doing now? I'm thinking, sir. But and that's the next question. Well, what? Thinking about what? So according to the Buddhist treatment of that problem, well, there can be no thinking without thinking about what? You understand it? No thinking without the objects of thinking. No thought without at least one object of thought. So, according to this theory, that flash, that emergence implies, presupposes simultaneous, synchronical emergence of thought, its objects, Mitzvah and its word, that which supposedly may what?
Think.
Exactly, Andrea. Yes. But don't you think that there are only three simultaneously arising components? Of course, far more than that. By the way, let me return to this physical analogy. Because even electron, which is considered the simplest factor, most elementary factor or particle in the whole nature, combines in itself what? Its electromagnetic what?
Force.
Charge or force, okay. And its what? However small, what? Light. Mass. Mass. Size here doesn't matter. No. Likewise, exactly likewise, a single thought in the way similar to which electron is in itself. Electromagnetic charge first and mass second. So, as you probably know, mass treated also in its turn as what?
Weight.
Weight treated at the same as energy by Albert Einstein. Yes. And of course, of course, you may say after having read any elementary manual of physics for any secondary school in the inhabitable universe, yes, yes, you must know that they are incomparable. Because the electromagnetic force of an electron exceeds its mass energy. I mean, billions and billions of them. But nevertheless, what is important, it is the complexness of even such a smallest particle of nature and electrons. The same with thought. So we have thought or thinking together with its objects. You cannot say that thinking flashes and then syncs up its objects. No. Remember till the end of your days, ladies and gentlemen, there, you know, there can be no when, because there is practically no time here. Because it all happens at the same moment. But not only objects. Because there are some external characteristics of thought. I mean external, that is, in the sense of, rather, in Aristotelian sense of accidental. Thought may be what? No, not even. No, it is a different matter. Thought may be, as we have already learned from the Dhammapada, from the first verse of the Dhammapada, thought may be what?
Chose.
Sorry, louder.
Chose.
It may be good thought or evil thought. It may be exact thought or inexact thought. Yes? And it may be strong thought, which is very seldom the case, and weak thought, which is almost always the case. But it wouldn't change its duration. Duration remains the same. And objects remain the same, since whenever and wherever we are trying to think about that emergence, objects are already there, together with no interval of time between that flash of thought and the appearance of the objects of that thought. But so, apart from that emergence of thought itself and its objects, we have a lot of additional or complementary characteristics, such as strength of thought, yes. And again, its karmic characteristics, it may be karmically good or karmically bad or karmically indifferent. More than that, that thought may be an ordinary thought, like in me and in you, and an extraordinary thought that is trained, yogically trained, and already transformed into a kind of super thought, not subject to the influences of other phenomena. So there are a lot of characteristics, but you cannot say that thought is, as it were, endowed with those characteristics and objects. No, it is all in one flash. You got it, or not yet? In my opinion, it is very simple, yes. That is practically nothing to speak about. But more than that, speaking of those external characteristics, we may continue their enumeration ad infinitum, as in fact it was continued in the main philosophical text of the Theravadin Buddhism, Dhamma Sanghani. For instance, thought may be sad or murky, yes. Thought may be light, yes. Zephyrous, or joyous, yes. Or agreeable, disagreeable, disgusting. But you may add a lot of other, irrelevant characteristics, like such a useful thought or useless thought. But all that appears together with a flash of thought, but as that which is external to thought itself. And of course, the most interesting thing about that externality, about that outsideness to thought itself, of those characteristics, yes, it is where did the thought, or does the thought emerge? Only by the way, ladies and gentlemen, speaking of the emergence of thought, it would be rather better to use only the past tense, because we cannot grasp it in its momentary emergence. It always, as it were, has already emerged. Yes.
About thoughts in the future, can we talk about those?
Sorry, you started reading in those texts which I asked you to read, and what was said quick about the future? Now, it is very interesting, particularly in the interpretation of Jnana Ponika Thera. What about future thought? Given the momentariness of the flash or emergence of thought together with all its objects and all its external characteristics, what about its future? The Buddhist schools of philosophy, somewhere nearer to the, closer to the middle of the first millennium AD, differ on that account. They differ. Because there was a school, you must have read about that in the text, there were schools according to which, properly speaking, only present time exists. And future is a sheer mental projection. With past, with the past, it is in a way even more complicated. And that is why the Buddhist masters of old, or rather the Buddhist master of two main Theravadin Buddhist schools, Vaibhashika and Sautrantika, discussed the problem of reality with respect to mental events. We may, of course, suppose, apart from a very general statement, but rather nihilistic statement in one of the later Buddhist schools, and first of all in the Madhyamaka, pedagogically very demonstrative. We cannot perceive the past. That the past thought, because it has already passed. Yes, we cannot perceive the present, because it has not yet become perceivable. And we cannot perceive the future, because it has not yet appeared. Here we see, of course, the blame with grammatical tenses. So often our language is inadequate. Our language, I mean, including English, French, Sanskrit, and Pali languages. No, any language is inadequate for description of the Buddhist theory of thought. Louder, please.
So is the only thing, which would be an inappropriate word, but lacking any better word, is the only which is perceptible only that which is occurring?
Which is what?
Occurring.
You mean
like the emergence of
that
thought,
is you, you prefer to use continuous present, yes. Is occurring. You know, at least Sautrantikas think your way, sir. Yes, but the problem is that philosophically speaking, the problem is complicated by one very interesting fact related to another chapter of Buddhist philosophy. Because the future cannot be defined positively in terms of dharmas. Because, strictly philosophically speaking, the future means that where thoughts of the present have not yet appeared, yes. Whereas there is another definition of the future, positive definition, having nothing to do with Buddhist theory of a certain mind. The future is the time of the future Buddhas, of the Buddhas which never were in the past, which do not teach us now, and it is those Buddhas who may appear in the future, but it has nothing to do with our theory of thought, mind, and consciousness. 3 minutes smoking, with your kindest permission, ladies and gentlemen.